Hi, everyone. Welcome to Nancy's Metaphysical World and More today. I have another great guest. I'm actually excited to talk with him, and through the show, I'll explain to him why I'm so excited to talk to him, but I'm going to bring him on right away. So, Sam, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Nancy. I'm excited to talk to you as well.
Good. Now, Sam, could you tell the listeners a little bit about who you are and what you do, and then I'm going to just kind of ask you all kinds of questions.
My name is Sam Jeppe, and I'm a Vedic astrologer. That's one who practices the astrology of India that originated in India thousands of years ago. And it's a very accurate and precise system. And I also write books on that, and I also have a lot of free classes at my websites and stuff, which we can talk about. But that's who I am. I've also been studying these Indian approaches to life for more than 25 years, actually. That includes things like yoga and meditation and studying the energetic patternings here on Earth. So Vedic astrology comes from the same cultural background of yoga. And, that's also the same energetic system that is related to Tai Chi and all the martial arts and things like that. So it all sort of comes from that same origin. So that's about, that's a pretty general way to describe who I am.
Okay, that's good. Sam, there is difference between the astrology that you do and the normal astrology here that's done in the United States or in the Western world. Can you explain what the difference might be?
I love the term, just to talk a little bit, the normal. The normal astrology. one of the main differences is that there's a different zodiac that's used. Now, people say, well, what do you mean different zodiac? Isn't there just one zodiac? Well, actually, what the difference is in the Western astrology, which is what you're calling the normal astrology, they use the zodiac called tropical zodiac, which starts the first day. The first sign of the zodiac is Aries, and that begins on the first day of spring. That's when they say Aries starts. But then there's also a constellation of Aries in the sky, right?
Mm-hmm.
Most people think that those things line up, but they actually don't. In Western astrology, the constellations in the sky don't line up with the signs that are being referred to. They're based on the seasons in Western astrology. And in Vedic astrology, generally what's called the sidereal zodiac is used, which is a zodiac that's accurate with the stars in the sky, which means the constellations. So, for instance, this is just a matter of scientific fact, it's not a pejorative comment, but when in Western astrology, when it says that this is the first day of Aries, the sun is actually just barely in the constellation of Pisces. This is an astronomical fact. That doesn't mean Western astrology doesn't work and the tropical zodiac doesn't work, but that's one of the biggest differences is Vedic astrology uses the actual stars in the sky as well. That's why they use the zodiac that is accurate with the constellations in the sky. That's the biggest technical difference. Other than that, there's a lot of different ways to approach the actual system of astrology that's different. And that would be quite a long and complicated discussion. But in general, it's the same planets, signs, and houses in Western astrology, but there's a different zodiac. And in fact, many Western astrologers also use the sidereal or the stellar zodiac now because they find it to be more accurate. And, most of my Western astrology clients, which there are a lot of them, don't realize that that the zodiac being referred to isn't accurate with the stars in the sky. And again, not that it means that Western astrology doesn't work, but this is a technical point that is probably the biggest difference between the two, at least initially.
So if the Western astrology uses, as they consider Aries being the first part, and you're using basically the stars and their part, is there a difference as the stars change? I mean, for example, if my birthday is July 30th, 1948, is there something I can look at that tells me that at some point in time, instead of my actually being a Leo, I may in fact be a different sign?
Well, here's the difference, too. I mean, so we can talk more about this difference. It is important. The other thing that is different, well, first of all, yes, the signs do change, but for instance, in July 30th, that's a tropical sun sign of Leo in Western astrology. But the sun is actually still in the stars of Cancer. That's astronomically. And what that means is that when we look up in the sky, we see stars. And when we say this in Western astrology, that a person is a Leo, for instance, what that means is a sun sign position. It's where the sun is relative to what we're looking at from Earth. So that means that at least that was the origin of it. But now since the zodiac has shifted, those positions don't line up anymore. So Western astrology, there's a lot of sort of illusion around what's being referred to. What they're talking about now is the archetype of Leo. But yes, that's going to change. So your sun would be in the sign of Cancer in Vedic astrology. But I have to say, the other important technical difference between Vedic astrology and Western astrology is Vedic astrology doesn't use the sun as the most important delineating feature. It uses the rising sign. So this is another technical point. This is the way the practice is done, is that, for instance, if you were born July 30th, 1948, that's the Leo sun sign. But Leo, the sun was in Leo for 30 days, so that's quite a general thing to base a personality trait or a life path on, whereas the rising sign changes every 2 hours. And the moon sign is also very important and more important in Vedic astrology because that changes every 2.5 days. So Vedic astrology bases the most important factors on different things. And I think your deeper point is, how do these two systems make sense? That's the deeper point. How can it be that it's a different zodiac, but yet Western astrology still works and Vedic astrology works? The reason is because astrology itself is much bigger than the systems we use to explain it, and so I can always see how the two systems make sense. Like you as a sun sign Leo in Western astrology, if I looked at your Vedic chart, which means your birth date, time, and place, I would be able to see why you resonate with the Leo archetype in one way or another, or how you don't, and to explain these things in a way that makes sense to you. All systems make sense. All systems work. It's just like religions. All religions lead to the same goal, lead to the same path, but they explain it a little differently. So what astrology really is the study of the divine universe that creates beings and experiences. The systems that we use to explain it, these are human inventions. This is the human mind trying to interact with the infinite universe. So there's going to be differences here and there based on culture, based on language, based on different things. But they all lead to the same ultimate truth.
Okay. Now, there's also a part that when I was reading about the Vedic astrology, it talks about, you know, avoiding the problems before they arise. You know, and to me, for example, I have a 501c3 called A Child's Miracle Mind, and it's really based upon trying to help these children that are here now that have been labeled with ADD, ADHD, to be able to have alternatives before they're put on the drugs or alternatives to get them off the drugs, because I really don't believe they should be on them.
Okay.
Well, not everybody, but I mean the majority of them, they're just handing it out like candy, and
That's
I have a hard time with that.
Okay.
So when I was reading about the Vedic astrology, it was talking about how the way that you guys do it, you're actually looking for things that are going to happen that you have a chance to change. Where when you do an astrology chart, the quote Western one here, it doesn't sound like it goes into that as much.
Yeah. Well, I have to say that this is very true. Vedic astrology is not looked at as some kind of wacky pursuit that, you know, these sort of weird metaphysicians engage in. In Indian culture, it's a regular part of life. Doctors use astrology. People use astrologers to do their marriages and stuff. You know, this is why Vedic astrologers have been arranging marriages for thousands of years. It's not because Indians are stupid and are willing to be oppressed. It's because they know that astrology works. So it is very predictive. And what happens, the practice of Vedic astrology itself is oriented towards looking into the karmas of the soul's incarnation. One of the things to really understand is that it is an Eastern approach to life, which really shifts the paradigm right away. In the West, we don't really talk that much about, you know, reincarnation. Like, people say, so does that mean you believe in reincarnation? Well, yes, if you want to put it, if you want to make it that literal. In the Eastern way of looking at the world, everything is a spiritual being. And our life on earth is part of our spiritual life, but our spirit has existed. It's an eternal thing. And the universe is a reflection, is an expression of that eternal nature. And we come here in different lifetimes so that the soul can evolve toward experiences in different lifetimes. It's not some fuzzy, debatable point. It's part of, it's the way life is lived in the East. And the astrology obviously reflects that. So when we look in the chart, we're looking to see what the soul is going to experience in this lifetime. So it's very predictive, saying these things are going to happen at this time, these things are going to happen at this time. And there's absolute changes that happen. And so it's oriented around this predictive model. And so, in fact, my Indian clients, they really just sort of hammer me for predictions. They just want me to tell them, you know, when's a good time to start the business, when's a good time to do this, when's a good time to do that, because they know it works on that level. Western clients, they're a little bit easier. They just want to know about their spiritual growth and stuff like that. So when I start telling them a good time to do things, oftentimes they don't even believe it's going to work, and then it kind of blows their mind. But I start going backwards and saying, so this is when you got married, right? So this is when you had the kid. You had some difficulty here. And they're like, wow, you can see all that? It's like, so to answer your question, absolutely. It's geared towards helping us interact with the universe and avoiding mistakes. Because these the planets represent the deities. They represent the universal divine forces in life that work through us. See, astrology is not something up there. It's not something separate. Mm-hmm. We live in the universe. What else is there but the universe? Everything that exists is going to exist in the universe. And we are a microcosm of that universe. Each in a different form, but all coming from the same universal source, the same universal energy. That's why in yoga it says we are all one and all this. That's what it means. Mm-hmm. We all come from this eternal source, and it's the universe. And so astrology shows that universal being and what the mood was that created us. And it's based on our karma, based on what our soul has learned so far. So we come here, and then we're going to have these experiences at this different times that are going to compel us to awaken more and more. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I mean, and I'm fascinated by it.
Beautiful, huh?
Yeah, because most people really don't know about, you know, this particular part of, you know, astrology. They're only used to what they have been told here. And to me, it's always lacked something.
Okay? Yeah, that's right. And, you know, just to say this, too, is that, you know, this idea is not very different from the way we live our life on Earth, especially the idea of reincarnation and stuff, which is still such a revolutionary concept in the West. It still just blows people's minds. But everything, I mean, just look at our life on Earth. We have evolved from being an infant to an adolescent to a child, and what happens is our mind, we already see how we evolve in this lifetime. Mm-hmm. Life is evolution. You know, in the West, we're so disconnected from a greater flow of our soul's wisdom because we have this concept that we were somehow born of some random accident, we're going to disappear in some random way, and we got one lifetime to get it right. But that doesn't make any sense.
Not at all.
That's so disconnected from everything else that flows. And so how hard is it to conceive and to project that this lifetime is one of many lifetimes? And so the idea that, well, how come we don't remember our past lives or the things that people would say, which are good questions, but our conscious memory is really not the best way to judge the spectrum of reality. I mean, many things have happened in this lifetime that we don't remember. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were all born. We don't remember that. Mm-hmm. We all learned to walk. We don't remember that. Many things happen that we don't remember. You know, our conscious mind is there to allow us to live our life in a healthy way. Just because we can't remember our past lives in our conscious state doesn't mean that the memories aren't there, doesn't mean that we should trust our conscious memory for everything, because like I said, there are many things that have happened to us that we don't remember in our conscious mind. So it really doesn't take even that much imagination to extend our gaze beyond the one lifetime, you know, sort of Western paradigm, and then we can connect with this deeper universal flow. And then once we do that, it's very easy to see what astrology is talking about.
Yeah, I'm intuitive. I use cards to help me understand all the information that I get. You know, it doesn't make me right or doesn't make me wrong. It's just the tools I use. But people constantly, when I go to read them, will say to me, well, I read my horoscope this morning and it's blah, 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 blah. And I go, but you're missing a whole big part of everything unless you really know your total, total chart. You know, you can't just read one little thing because you were born, say, for example, in July and expect that to be right. It doesn't work like that. You know, and so people have a tendency to, you know, want to trust astrology, but
right.
at the same time, because it's not a complete, I don't think it's complete, and no offense to other astrologers, but I don't, and I never have. So to me, it's not giving them a total story.
Well, see, and what you're doing, or what you're giving voice to here is a real, it's such a common misconception about astrology. And again, this is because of the West. This is because of the Western exploitation. Anyone who thinks that their horoscope is astrology, you know, it's just, it couldn't be further from the truth.
Right.
I mean, how could it possibly be that some little entertaining column is going to actually tell you something meaningful about your life? And the example that I use is, I think, a very good one. You know, when you look at astrology, you need exact birth time. You look at all the planets, all of the houses, signs, aspects. It's a very detailed process. It's every bit as much detailed as something like the medical profession.
Mm-hmm.
And you need that type of training in order to do it accurately. And so let's use the medical profession as an example. To talk about horoscopes relative to astrology is like to talk about aspirin in a relationship to the medical profession.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like if someone were to say, well, you know, I took aspirin for my, you know, for my cancer and it didn't make it go away, so, you know, so Western medicine doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
You'd never hear something like that because people realize, see, people respect Western medicine. It's something they trust. So they would never make such a statement because they realize that would be foolish. They realize, well, there's a lot more to medicine than just aspirin, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then they talk about something like astrology, which is incredibly technical and detailed and been around a lot longer than pretty much anything else. It's the first science. And they reduce it to horoscopes. Say, oh, those horoscopes don't work. Astrology, you know, doesn't that, you know, that's not,
mm-hmm.
it's so completely wrong. But a lot of it, again, it's because in the Western world, we're used to astrology being so marginalized. And frankly, a lot of the blame has to do with Western astrologers.
Mm-hmm.
And many of them don't explain it very well, quite frankly.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they could do a better job a lot of the time. And I have a lot of good friends who are Western astrologers, so no names here, because many of them are excellent, they know what they're doing, and yada yada. But in mass, culturally, there's a lot of exploitation through astrology.
Mm-hmm.
And there's quite a bit of that in India as well, but they already know that it works. It's just like there's exploitation through medicine and other things. But because it's already regarded as a serious science in the East, you can still interact with it in an entertaining and fun way. And that's really the difference. The fact that there's an entertaining and fun way to work with astrology through horoscopes isn't really the biggest problem. The biggest problem is that it's not also respected. In fact, it's not just astrology. Any metaphysics in the West aren't respected.
Mm-hmm.
And you said that you read cards. You know, reading cards or doing palmistry or any kind of energetic work, none of it is respected in the West.
No, they think we're all crazy.
Yeah, they think we're all crazy and stuff like that, and yet metaphysics is being proved. I mean, over and over again. You know, in the ancient Vedas, they said, what's the nature of existence? And they said existence, energy, and bliss. And that's exactly what we see. As we dissect matter, we realize that matter is all an illusion. It's ultimately just intelligent energy.
Mm-hmm.
That's what all matter is intelligent energy, moving in ways that we can't predict or understand. And that's exactly what they said 2,000 years ago. not 2,000, 5,000 years ago.
And again, it's all true. And there's so much out there that people are missing. You know, and so when I see something like this come up, it's like, you know, we really need to let people know that this is a whole different way that appears to be much, much better and goes into a lot more detail. You know, and people who are really looking for some kind of guidance really should turn to something like this rather than their regular, everyday Western astrology charts, because yours, as I'm looking at all the information, you go through many signs. I mean, you have 27 signs of the moon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the 27, yeah, they're called nakshatras, yeah. I mean, there's it gets very specific. So it's not just that you have the 12 signs of the zodiac, the 12 houses that the planets reside in, and the planets themselves, but there's also 27 lunar mansions that approximate the motion of the moon each day. It takes the moon 27 days to go around the Earth. So, see, this is why Vedic astrology is based on that stellar zodiac, because the first zodiac was based on how far the moon moves each day. And so they looked at the important planets along what's called the ecliptic, which is our vantage point looking at the orbit of the Earth around the sun, and they saw that each day, you know, the moon moves 13 degrees and 20 minutes each day, so it takes it about 27 days to go around the Earth. So they looked at each one of these sections of sky, and so there's also 27 lunar days, and boy, they're very specific. Once you start getting into that, you see the psychological temperament and the spiritual purpose of each planet. And it's not just for the moon, it's all of the planets. So the sun is in one of the nakshatras, so you have, you know, the sun, moon, Mars, Jupiter, all of the planets are in a sign, a house, and with a corresponding nakshatra, which is just a fancy word for the lunar mansion. And also, there are 16 what are called harmonic charts. So it's 16 charts, it's not just one chart. There are 16 charts.
That's pretty good. Pretty in-depth, I would think.
And also a very accurate what's called a dasha system, which means a timing system. This is one of the main things that makes Vedic astrology so accurate, is it's called Vimshottari Dasha, which is just a complicated Sanskrit word, but it's a system of timing that is just so specific. It's so accurate. I mean, you know, you wonder why one day your mind completely changes and you start doing something totally different. This is why. Because different karmas wake up at different times. Mm-hmm. We have these different phases in our life, and then they change. And then different karmas just means actions. Then this thing is going to start happening, and you're going to be getting the karmas of this planet. And then that's what's going to... This is why the predictive quality. This is why people really rely on Vedic astrology to make these predictions, because these dasha cycles... These planetary cycles are so accurate. People want to know what this next cycle is, you know, will be doing and things like that. So it's the other thing I just want to mention, and I know I'm talking a lot, but it is quite a lot to say, is that the remedies are also really good in Vedic astrology, because it's the same remedies that Ayurvedic doctors use. And, you know, things like yoga and gems and mantras and all of these same healing practices that are used in yoga and the medical system are used in astrology. In fact, many people look at the astrologer as equal or even superior to the doctor.
That's good.
I usually recommend people go to an Ayurvedic doctor if it's a health issue, but astrologers can prescribe and inform a client of the same type of remedies that a doctor would, and they work.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
I also have a problem with medical professions, but that's okay, too.
Yeah.
And you were just talking about, like, some of the tools that are used in yours when you talked about the gemstones and the mantras and all that, but you also, you know, do balancing rituals and different things like that. I mean, it's not just a little bit. This is actually a lot. It covers a lot.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I mean, I just said a couple of the categories. But for one thing, you know, just because you have the whole Vedic tradition at your disposal, see, what people don't realize is this is the entire lineage of Indian mysticism is what Vedic astrology is tapped into. Now, it's more important to contrast that with the Western mystical tradition, which is almost non-existent. It doesn't mean that Jesus and the Christians weren't mystics, but the mystical quality of Christianity is pretty much non-existent, which means that the difference is that in the East, in order to, we aren't taught that we're supposed to worship God. I mean, we are, but we're supposed to become God. We're supposed to awaken to the divinity within us. And the way to do that is through techniques. This is the difference. Indian and Eastern approaches are mystical, and that includes Hindus and Buddhists. They're not just taught that they should be a good Buddhist. They're taught that they need to awaken the Buddha within. So you do that through meditation, through mantras, through techniques, through yoga, through different ceremonies, rituals. These things aren't just to make you a good disciple so that you can get your way into heaven and be a good follower. In fact, if you're a follower but you're not a practitioner, they say you're doing it wrong. You need to practice first.
Mm-hmm.
So the practices are what's more important than the belief. The belief comes later, but you can disbelieve, but do the practices.
Mm-hmm.
And then your belief supports your awakening rather than replaces it. Because what happens in the West often is we think that just because we believe in something, that's going to actually be some sort of transformation, and it's not. We have to do something first and have an experience of the divine. Once we have the experience, then the belief will follow, because our belief will be based on our experience, not just a dogma.
Mm-hmm.
And so the whole pantheon of Hindu and Vedic deities and mantras and rituals are all wide open at that point. I mean, there's so much of that, it's just incredible. It's so specific. There's so many paths of divinity in the East, whether it's yoga or tantra, there's Shiva worship, Vishnu, Shakti worship, there's traditional Hinduism, you can come at it from so many directions, you find out what the person is interested in. Mantras for the planets, for the deities that rule the planets, for the nakshatras, there's rituals for deities and planets, and everything you can imagine.
Yes, but that's good. We need those, really. I mean, our planet's in pretty sad shape, I think. So all of those would help. Now, if somebody wanted to get a hold of you, Sam, how would they do that?
Well, they would. The best way I would recommend is for people to go to my website, universalastrology.net. I have several, but this is a good one because I have a lot of free classes and free information there where they can just sign up and get a whole bunch of free stuff. Universalastrology.net. That's one word, like universalastrology.net. And, that has all my contact information, email, and all that is there.
How long does it usually take for you to do a chart for somebody?
You mean how long?
Like if
am I backlogged as far as appointments?
No, like if somebody wanted you to do a chart,
do a reading.
To do a reading, okay?
Yeah.
And they wanted you to do all the things that you do, how long does that take you personally per person to put together?
Yeah, well, I mean, I do 45-minute readings and 90-minute readings, so it depends on how much time they want to spend with me. But as far as drawing up the chart itself, it doesn't take that long at all. In fact, I already started yours, which was July 30th, 1948, but I don't have the rest of the information. But I'm already looking at where the planets were, but I don't know what the rising sign is. So it doesn't take that long at all.
I'll give it to you. I was born at 4:59 p.m. in Rockford, Illinois.
4:59
mm-hmm.
p.m., Rockford. Yeah, so, now we have software that calculates all these things. And 4:59, okay. And so the software calculates all these things, and so we draw the chart up right away. And do you want to know a few things about your chart?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, okay. So I'll tell you, in the Vedic tradition, you're considered a Scorpio because Scorpio is rising. And if you've seen in your Western chart, you have a Sagittarius rising sign, right?
Right.
Yeah, so it goes back to Scorpio. This is the difference. You still have that Jupiter right on the ascendant. If you know anything about your chart, Jupiter is within a couple degrees of your rising sign. So anyone with Jupiter on the rising sign is going to have a naturally philosophical nature. Jupiter is about larger philosophies, the awareness of good and bad, good and evil, and the capacity and desire to want to choose the good over the bad. This is what really makes us human. And so Jupiter, right on the ascendant, especially in the sign of Scorpio, shows that you're going to want to deepen your personal philosophies, especially through strengthening your own personal insecurities and fears and things like that. Because the Scorpio rising sign does give an awareness of the fragility of life, and you really want to protect the underdog. Because once we realize that we've suffered and that we have these deep vulnerabilities, then we want to try to help others overcome theirs. And Scorpio is very much the champion of the emotionally marginalized. And especially with a powerful Jupiter in the first house, you'll assume that mantle very easily. Have a lot of ambition toward it. Your ruling planet Mars goes into the 11th house. In the sign of Virgo, so you'll very carefully plot your strategy of how to do that, huh?
Mm-hmm.
And it's also Jupiter's also in an angle from the moon, so you have an exalted moon, very close degree of exaltation in the sign of Taurus. So the qualities of motherhood and divine motherhood, especially, are really important to you. You've probably really learned a lot. Did you have children?
I have a daughter.
You have a daughter, yeah.
And a granddaughter. What's
that?
And a granddaughter.
And granddaughter, but and you've probably learned, you know, your biggest lessons in life dealing with, the transformations that come from seeing yourself reflected back in their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Venus in the eighth house shows that there have been some ups and downs in relationships. Have you been divorced at least once?
Yeah. Uh huh.
Okay. Once or more?
Twice.
Twice. Okay. I had a feeling. These are just very quick observations, but, mm-hmm. So you see how it kind of works that way. A lot of your life here, because of the nodes are also very important in Vedic astrology. There's what's called the dragon's head and dragon's tail. They become very important in Vedic astrology because they show it's actually the eclipse points. We just had the eclipses, but for you, the north node is in the sixth house, which shows you're here to really work hard on some level and face the unpleasantness and the drudgery in life.
Been there doing that.
Yeah, that's right. Because a lot of your past lives, you've actually, learned about the deeper sort of mystical liberating truths, and you have a tendency to want to just kind of tune out and let it all sort of take care of itself. At least this is a sort of deep understanding that you have that there's a lot of karma and a lot of energy, just that the universe is taking care of everything.
Mm-hmm.
But what's been harder for you to do is the difficult day-to-day necessary hard work to bring about perfection in that principle. It's the opposition of letting everything sort of take care of itself and being proactive and making it happen. So this is a very deep karmic groove for you in this lifetime, to actually not just trust that everything will work out, but to be proactive and make sure that it happens. Make sure that you're doing everything you can to meet your challenges and bring about that state of realization.
Yeah,
so, what's that?
I was going to say that's pretty good.
Yeah. So there's a couple things, just hit on a couple themes.
And again, it's all good. A lot of people have a really hard time when they go to a Western astrologer because, again, they tell them what they get, but they also don't add any tools. And I know you guys add the tools, which is really important for a lot of people because they're giving them something, but then not helping them complete it. So,
oh, yeah.
Your part, the way that you guys do it, I think is real, really important. Now, do me a favor, Sam, and give out your website again, please.
Yes. UniversalAstrology.net. www.universalastrology.net.
And you've also written a book or two?
I've written one book, and I have another coming out soon. The one that I wrote is called The Ascendant, 108 Planets of Vedic Astrology, but it's actually a good book for Western astrologers as well because it shows how each ascendant, each rising sign, is very much in three dimensions. So it really brings about the planets as house rulers and in a traditional sense. It's called The Ascendant, 108 Planets of Vedic Astrology. There's information about that at my website as well.
Can they get it from your website?
Actually, you know what? I'll add the link better to it, actually. not that website, but you can get it at Amazon. I'm actually about to do a good promotion for my book, but have people email me information about the book is better.
Okay.
If people want that, they can send me an email.
Okay, and your email address is on your website.
Yeah, they can just click the email link.
Okay, so give out your website again. We want it right.
Thank you. UniversalAstrology.net.
Okay, that's cool. I have some other questions for you, Sam.
Yeah.
How long has it taken you to get to where you are? And I'm not asking you how long it took you to learn it all, because obviously you're probably still learning.
Yeah, we're all learning. I actually learned pretty quickly in this lifetime. A lot of it just woke up pretty quickly, but, you know, I've been studying astrology about 10 to 12 years.
Okay, which is pretty good. Now, there's also a school that people can get information from. Do you want to give that out?
The American College of Vedic Astrology?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, that's American College of Vedic Astrology is a organization in the United States that facilitates teachers' training, stuff like that. I think it's probably better if people are interested in studying more that they just sort of contact me. I can hook them up with resources. But, yeah, the American College of Vedic Astrology is a great organization now that promotes students along a course of study. And, you know, why it's good, in my opinion, is that it makes a person deepen their commitment. And rather than just kind of floating around and, oh, I'll study this, I'll study that, once you say, okay, I'm going to earn this certificate or whatever, you get serious. You really focus, and they don't hand those diplomas out like candy. It's difficult tests. And I've passed their level 2 graduate program, so I'm one of their trained teachers and tutors. I'll be teaching at 2 certified conferences in the next month. In fact, this time next week I'll be teaching astrology in Grass Valley, California at the American College of Vedic Astrology Certification Conference. And then in a couple weeks later, I'll be in Sedona teaching at the BLAST Astrology Conference with a lot of Western astrologers. The way I approach astrology is universal. That's why my website is Universal Astrology,
mm-hmm.
because astrology itself is much bigger than the Western and the Vedic system. Western astrology works very well also. But there are many things, most things about the astrology systems are common to both, but they're different predictive tools. And so my goal is to universalize astrology. And so the methods that I teach work for Western and Vedic astrologers, at least in the universal astrology approach. But then if people want to deepen their Vedic astrology techniques, then they can study with me separately in that.
Okay, that's pretty good. The other thing, now you also write for an annual forecast.
That's right. I'm finishing those now. I'm working so hard. Yeah. I do these for, they're called Astro Center is the website, but they supply the forecast for MSN, Microsoft Network, and other portals worldwide. But they hire me to write their 2009 Vedic astrology forecast. As far as I know, it's the only ones available. A couple other great things are happening for me in this way since we're talking about it. I'm going to be featured at astrology.com. writing a blog for them.
Oh,
so it'll be the first Vedic astrology blog at astrology.com, which is big.
Yeah, no, that's good.
That's good, yeah. So people check out. In fact, it's going to be starting this week or next week. I think it's this week. So at astrology.com, they'll now have a Vedic astrology column, and I'll be writing it.
That's cool.
I also have 2 articles that are going to be published in yoga magazines in October. So there's a lot happening for me right now, which is good. And I'm get to appear on these cool radio shows.
That's the best part of all, right?
I love it. I love talking like this.
Yeah, it is. Now, tell us a little bit about your book. Now, you went into it a little bit, but can you go into it just a little bit more so people can kind of know what they can expect?
Absolutely. I love your questions, Nancy.
Well, thank you.
you let me talk in depth about these things, so that's great. Now, what it is about is it's kind of an unusual title, The Ascendant, 108 Planets of Vedic Astrology. Sounds a little bit wacky, because there really aren't 108 planets, literally. But what it means is that there are 12 rising signs, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And there are 9 major planets. And for each rising sign, each planet acts completely different. this is the research that I've done, and this is the same in traditional Western astrology, because you have to assess the planets as house rulers. For instance, in your chart, you're a Scorpio, okay? That's the rising sign, and the rising sign is the point from which you measure the rest of the houses and the planets as house rulers. House rulers means that each planet rules one of the signs. For you, Jupiter is in the first house, but Jupiter is the ruler of Sagittarius and Pisces, which is the second and the fifth house. So Jupiter, for a Scorpio person, is the ruler of the second and the fifth house. So this is just the basic nature of Jupiter for Scorpio, for all Scorpio rising. Now, if you had a Libra rising, Jupiter rules the third and the sixth house. So that's a completely different temperament. Same planet, completely different temperament. And so this is what I explore in the book. Now, this is generally known and talked about in Western astrology, not very much. It's talked about more in Vedic astrology, but as a general concept, not as something that is really systematized and really explored and exploded with a lot of depth. And that's what I do in my book. So I take each one of the planets, I give the house rules, or I give the rules that determine their nature as a house ruler, and then I take each of the 12 rising signs and explain each planet in each rising sign.
Okay.
So it's quite in-depth.
It sounds very in-depth, but it also sounds like it would be really, really informative. And I get, you know, people who are into the astrology but are not getting the full picture, to me, your book sounds like it would be something that they really should check into.
You know, I'll say this about it. Everybody who has read it, and there's been quite a lot now, especially more of the teachers, have come to the conclusion that it is the most comprehensive book on houses and planets as house rulers that has been written. And see, houses, the planetary houses, are a great source of confusion, especially in Western astrology, where the signs are really important, but people don't really understand how to use the houses very well. I go deeply into that in this book and explain each one of the houses and how each planet operates as a house ruler. Again, this is very important. And the other thing I will say about the book in general, it's more like a reference book. It's more like a library book. And how you can use this, how everybody can use this, beginning students and advanced students, is with every chart you get, there's going to be a rising sign. And to understand the individual nature of each planet in that rising sign is invaluable. And so really, every chart that someone gets, they can use my book. Like, let's say they just look at your chart and they see that it's a Scorpio rising. They can go to the chapter on Scorpio, because it's broken up into signs, and read about each planet. How is Mercury specifically for a Scorpio? How is Jupiter specifically for a Scorpio rising? How is Venus, etc.? Because that's going to be totally different than how Mercury is for a Leo rising or a Cancer rising. It's really totally different. And so each chart you can dissect in a microscopic fashion, just understanding the nature and temperament of that incarnation.
That's pretty interesting, because, like I said, most people who are basing their astrology charts on what they know here, they really are missing a lot of other information that they're just not given.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, and this to me sounds like if people are really into astrology, horoscopes, whatever term they want to use, you know, your book sounds like to me it would help them out immensely. So I really think that they should check it out and see if that will help them understand things better.
Yeah, I agree. And one of the things about studying astrology is that it's really the study of life. People say, well, you know, like they ask me, should I study astrology, or why would I study it? Do you think I can make a living at it, or something like that's the reason to study it? You know, the thing is that we study so many things that don't really teach us anything about life. I mean, important things about life, about the nature of who we are. But when you study astrology, you're studying how the universe works. You're not studying, you know, Jupiter. You're studying about your philosophies and how they form your life. And, you know, with Mars, you're studying about courage and the choice between, you know, fighting an external battle out of weakness or fighting the internal battle through courage. I mean, you're learning about the forces of life that inform who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And what's more important than that? So the choice isn't whether or not a person is going to make a living at it, because very few people will. But it's, do I want to learn about life? That's why, that's the reason to study astrology. I definitely prefer to teach people astrology than to do readings, although I love to do readings. But I really appreciate when a student wants to study. I'm sorry, when a person who gets readings then also wants to study it. That's why I have a lot of free classes, because then they're going to expand their mind. It's like teaching. It's like giving a person a fish or teaching them to fish.
Right. And I'm all for the teaching, too, believe me.
Yeah, it's very rewarding, because then you see the person is interacting. They're expanding their mind. This is what teaches us about life, is we study something important and our mind expands. And then it also makes the readings more important. It just increases everything.
Mm-hmm. I have another question for you.
Sure.
When they decided that Pluto was no longer a planet, did that affect anything?
You know, that's a good question. In Vedic astrology, they don't traditionally use the planets that aren't visible. That means Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto are not generally used in Vedic astrology.
Okay.
Now, some Vedic astrologers use them. I actually look at them, but it's not traditional. And this is because they only use the planets out to Saturn, because those are the ones that we can see with our eyes.
Okay.
And so, but I think it's valid to use the hidden planets, the ones that we can't see with our eyes, as well. But the nature of Pluto, it doesn't matter what we call it, what it's called. You know, it's a force. It's a universal force. The astrologers who, and, you know, there were a lot of astrologers that, frankly, acted like big babies over this thing.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous. It was ridiculous. And, frankly, there a lot of them were Western astrologers. Vedic astrologers that I know who actually used it, who also actually used Pluto, they didn't say anything. And I think this is because Vedic astrology is a science. It's considered a science. And the people that are drawn to it would respect the scientific community and realize that it was right, actually.
Mm-hmm.
These scientists were right. I've been saying for 20 years Pluto isn't a planet. It's not a planet. It doesn't behave like a planet behaves. It's about time that the scientists declassified it in that way. See, planets behave in very specific ways. For one thing, they orbit the sun in a tight, what's called the ecliptic.
Mm-hmm.
This is what the ecliptic is like when you see pictures of the solar system and you see all the planets lined up in this like narrow band, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what the ecliptic is. The planets go around the sun in that ecliptic. But Pluto doesn't. Pluto goes way outside. It dips inside the orbit of Neptune, then goes way outside. It doesn't travel on the ecliptic. It goes all over the place. It's a Kuiper belt object. It's obvious that's what it is. And it's orbiting another body. It's orbiting its moon. It's not a planet. So, but that doesn't change its astrological implications. So what's the big deal?
Yeah. No, and you're right. A lot of people over the Western astrologers, they just threw a hissy fit. And it's like,
oh, it's
come on already.
It was crazy. And I'll tell you what's funny is I was in a few news groups. And, what happened is before they declassified it, people weren't sure. They were, what they thought was going to happen is, see, they were either going to declassify Pluto or they were going to bring in all these other Kuiper belt objects and call them planets as well. This was the choice.
Mm-hmm.
And so what was happening simultaneous to the fact that Pluto might be declassified was that other bodies like Eris and Ceres and these other asteroids would be called planets, because the astronomers had to make a decision, because there were all these other bodies that were larger than Pluto, and they weren't called planets, you see?
Mm-hmm.
Like, for instance, Ceres and Eris, especially, they're bigger than Pluto. So it's like, well, if Pluto's a planet, what are we going to do about these other objects? So instead of, and what a lot of Western astrologers were thinking is, oh, now we're going to have six more planets. What are they going to do? And they started planning. But then what happened is, instead of adding all these planets, they actually took one away. And so they were all ready to validate what the astronomers said when they thought they were going to tell them something good, like, now we have more planets. But then as soon as they declassified Pluto, it was like, oh, who pays attention to these dumb astronomers anyway? What do they know? It was ridiculous. And I couldn't help but just point out the hypocrisy. It made quite a few people mad at me. I was like, come on, guys. Who pays attention to them? You were about to pay attention to them when you thought they were going to tell you what you wanted to hear. Now that they didn't, you say they're a bunch of fools.
Uh-huh.
Just crazy. Anyway.
People are crazy. They do get like that, without a doubt. I have another question for you.
Yeah.
do you think it's important that a whole family have their charts done?
Oh, wow, great question. Man, you're hitting some great questions. You know, one of my favorite readings, my favorite types of readings are family astrology readings, where you look at the karma of the whole family.
Right.
It's fascinating. You can see what this person, you know, who this person is related to that one and which buttons are going to get pushed here and there. You can see which, you know, like one of the biggest things is the parents, you know, they have a child and they're not going to have the same interaction with each child. Parents want to love their child, you know, love their children, you know, equally and evenly. And even though they might, they just don't relate with a child as much as they relate to another one. Or no matter what they do with one child, the child is always depressed and things like that. You really can help a parent understand that this is their karma. That on some level, this person, this child, has this position to feel this way on some level. And so a certain amount of this is what you're doing, but you have to be very careful to this sensitivity they have. Sorry for that. Realize that it's not all you, that this is their karma to take you this way. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like parents will have a really sensitive child and that they're like, no matter what I do, you know, the child is just blah, blah. It's like, you know what? This is the child's karma. The best thing that you can do is realize that they have this deep sensitivity and, you know, lighten them up. No matter what they do, don't react. Don't contribute to their fear. If they get all fearful and scared, because parents get freaked out by their kids sometimes, it's all kinds of stuff go on. Because you can see how the child's chart interacts with the parent and how they get into this cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Very common. Like you'll see one child really scares the parent. You know, like the parent gets weirded out by the child's moods. And then the parent responds and the child gets more, you know, they feed off each other. So it's like, no, stay lighthearted. And it's amazing how much it can help people, especially with their children.
It can. Well, see, one of the things that's attached to my 501c3 is I want to open what's called the School of Now, which is a school that would never be outdated. And not only would the children learn the ABCs, 1, 2, 3s, they would learn all about all of the metaphysical stuff that goes along with it. And one of the things that I want to have done is an astrology chart like
Ooh.
This one, a numerology chart, and a reading like what I do, done on each child and each parent, so that they all can work together, they all know each sides of each other, they all, you know, so they have a more compatible relationship, which is basically what you just said.
That's great, yeah, I mean, and especially for the parent to know, because children, I mean, they're obviously open to everything, but because the parent, you know, like there's sort of a rule that you don't read the child's chart, that you don't read a child's chart before they're 12.
No, I don't believe that. I don't.
Well, I mean that you don't, not that you don't read it maybe for the parent, but telling, because the child doesn't understand what to do about it yet, that the free will of the child hasn't, it's not that you couldn't tell them, but that they don't, you know, they don't understand the
concept.
You know, yeah, how to be proactive and change their karma. They don't understand this sort of thing yet. Anyway,
mm-hmm.
But that's a general idea. So, but especially for the parent to understand how to help the child along.
Oh yeah, I think that's real important.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, I know it is. I mean, I've had some. Man, it's amazing because your child. I mean, this is, you know, you're not going to have a bigger responsibility in life and feel more, you know, bound through love and
mm-hmm.
willingness to help and to grow and to transform yourself than trying to help your child. At least hopefully that's the case.
Well, let's hope that's true. Sam, our time is just about up, and it's been wonderful talking with you.
Yeah, same here.
You've given out a lot of good information. So do me a favor, give out your website one more time and the name of your book.
I will do that, Nancy, and it's been a pleasure. UniversalAstrology.net. UniversalAstrology.net is my website, and the book is called The Ascendant, 108 Planets of Vedic Astrology. It's on Amazon. It's on my website. But if you're interested, it's better to just send me an email as well, because I don't have a payment button up at UniversalAstrology.net right now, because I don't want to take people away. I just want them to opt in and get all the free classes. And there are a lot of free classes at UniversalAstrology.net. Thank you for your time, Nancy. It's been a great conversation.
We'll talk again, Sam.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. And I'd like to thank you, the listeners. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have. May God bless all of you. Have a great week, and take care. Bye now.